The Surrey with a Fringe on top. Richard Rodgers music to, of course, When There Are Words to Oscar Hammerstein II's words from the musical Oklahoma. It was performed by pianist Ahmad Jamal with guitarist Ray Crawford and bassist Eddie Calhoun. Ahmad Jamal was all of 21 years old when he made that recording in 1951, and it was released on a CD called The Piano Scene of Ahmad Jamal, which came out actually some years later. And this is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. It's your connection to local performances, our broadcast made possible with support from Sweeney Brothers Carpet and Rug Gallery of Bloomington, featuring in-plant area rug cleaning using the master rug cleaning method. Sweeney Brothers at 11 Westport Court on Bloomington's east side, where the beauty of a room starts with the floor. Ahmad Jamal was a child prodigy playing classical music. By 18, he was on his first national tour, and in the more than six decades since then, he earned praise from legends from around the jazz world, among them most famously perhaps Miles Davis, Louis Armstrong. He's earned some of jazz's highest honors, including the National Endowment for the Arts Jazz Master's Fellowship and many other awards and honorifics and so on, and of course the praise of critics and especially other musicians the world around. Ahmad Jamal is going to be at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts with his current band, a trio of musicians joining him Saturday night, tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. They're going to be recreating their latest CD, which is called Blue Moon. Of course, that'll be like hearing the CD played live, except as always happens in live music, things will not be quite as they were recorded. It is my privilege and honor to have the chance to welcome Ahmad Jamal to this program.
Well, thank you. You're very welcome. I'm glad to hear your voice and glad that you're playing American classical music, sometimes referred to as jazz.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up right off the bat because...
I'm pretty quick. I'm a decisive guy. You got to be decisive this day and age.
I have read that, actually. Of course, this station is primarily airing European classical music, and I have read that you like that term. So, talk.
We who engage in this art form have to know the best of both worlds. We have to know Mozart. I was playing Franz Liszt when I was 10 years old in competition. If you're a Dave Brubeck or Jamal or McCoy Tyner or Oscar Peterson, in order to be successful, we have to know the best of both worlds. So we're the superior fellows. Because we know the European body of work, we know the American classical body of work. So I hate to say it, but I'm saying it.
Well,
we're the best.
Well, let me challenge you on that just a little bit. I mean, really, just with a question. Do most jazz American classical music players that you associate with have classic, you know, European classical chops as well as American? I know you do.
Everything depends on the knowledge that one possesses, where you're an astronaut, not astronaut, or a lawyer, the more you know, the better, as long as it's correct information. The more you know, the better. So seek knowledge if it be in China. So we in our field, we have to study the best of both worlds. So anybody who's a professional, like I am, like I hope I will remain, and like the Brubecks and George Shearing could play a Mozart concerto, but he could also write Lullaby Birdland. You've heard Lullaby Birdland, haven't you?
Oh, of course.
So George Shearing also played the late George Shearing. He also could play Mozart. So, or like me, Liszt, or the great works of in Chopin, be it Chopin or Ravel, Debussy, whatever. So that's what makes us unique, because we have to know the, once again, not to be redundant, but I'm going to be redundant, we have to know the best of both worlds. So most of us, yes, the answer is we. Yes, most of us know a certain amount of the European body of work and a great deal of American body of work, because a musician has to engage himself in a vast repertoire. And that's what makes the good musician or the superior musician or the outstanding musician his repertoire, his or her repertoire. So that's what we do. Yes, most of us know a lot of the European classical music, and we also know a lot of the American classical music. Works both ways for us.
Well, talk a little bit, if you don't mind, about your early training, how you balanced those when you were getting started as a pianist.
I started playing at a very old age, 3 years old. It took a long time to decide. I started playing at 3 years old. And that's supposed to be a joke, of course, but that's the truth. I started playing at three, started studying with Mary Cardwell Dawson, the first Afro-American, the only Afro-American, the only person that had Afro-American opera company. It hasn't been one since. And when she moved away, I studied with another master, the same master that studied under the same teacher, the Earl Weil. Earl Weil is one of the great exponents of Liszt, the late Earl Weil. So my teacher and Earl Weil was studying with the same master in Pittsburgh. When Mary Cardwell Dawson left, I started studying with James Miller. And I became very professional very, very young. I was playing professional at 14 years old, so my studies stopped around 17 when I left home. A band leader came and made me leave my happy home, so that was my Juilliard going on the road. So I got my PhD on the road with a big band.
So when you were studying with those folks, what kind of piano were you studying? What kind of music were you studying?
European classical.
And the jazz entered in, the American, when?
At what point? My own studies, and my own exposure. And we had a very, very rare music teacher in high school, and he had the first so-called jazz band in America called the Cadets in Pittsburgh, which is a center for the arts. A lot of people don't know that so many of the greats come from Pittsburgh. And it's a wonderful town to grow up in the arts. And my high school teacher, he started the first, what I consider the first American classical music / jazz band that was ever incorporated in the school system. And he had the Cadets, and I became pianist with the Cadets, but he also had the junior, senior, and beginner's orchestra that engaged in European classical music. So we had both forms in my high school. And I was working with some bands outside of high school, so I discovered the repertoire that I began making money with, and that was American classical music. So that's the rest is history. I've been doing it how many decades now, all over the world. I just finished a tour that ended up in Istanbul, started at the Olympia in Paris, where I have a lot of fans. And we did a month tour, ending up in Istanbul. So I've been going ever since.
Since you mentioned money, was money the reason you went jazz instead of classical?
Well,
or American versus European?
What happens? It was a natural transition. I mean, the decisions were made for me. Just the people asked me, "How did you choose music?" Music. I didn't choose music. Music chose me. At 3 years old, you're not making conscious decisions. And when you start playing that young, you're not making a choice. The choice is made for you. And it happened also, my professional career began at 14, but I didn't make that choice. It was just a natural transition. It wasn't about money. It's a combination of things that compel people to make their career, either legally, if they're a lawyer or a doctor or Indian chief, whatever. It's never one thing. So it was a combination of things that caused me to make the transition professionally to American classical music, and there I have remained since without regret.
And I'm glad you mentioned Pittsburgh, because I'm actually from Pennsylvania myself, southern part of it.
What part are you from, Kevin?
Chambersburg, south central part
which
of the
one?
State. Chambersburg, not far from Gettysburg.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I was just out there this summer and literally passed through Pittsburgh. And hadn't looked at that city in a very long time. And I guess it was news to me that so many jazz folks came out of there.
So many, and other people, too. There's a little tap dancer named Gene Kelly.
Yeah, fine fellow.
there's another, I think, Andy Warhol's from Pittsburgh as well. And we have some people who are in the sciences. We have a little company called Heinz 57. They make the thing called ketchup, you know, they use on hamburgers. That comes from Pittsburgh. So we're a very, very well-heeled society there from the philanthropic standpoint as well as the industrial standpoint, Bessemer steel process. We had one of the great steel works in the world. And we have a lot of artistic triumphs, to say the least.
And, of course, the city has gotten cleaned up so beautifully over the last number of decades.
It's so cleaned up, I get lost when I go there.
You got your recording start, though, when you moved to Chicago.
And I started recording when I moved to Chicago in 1951 with John Hammond being the catalyst for that, the great impresario and entrepreneur, and he's got it. Brought Bob Dylan to Columbia Records and was a big fan of Count Basie, big fan of my former bassist Israel Crosby, and he discovered my group and took me to Epic, a subsidiary of Columbia Records, in 1951. We began our recording career. It hasn't been a meteoric rise. It took me 7 years before I made a smash, but John Hammond started me in 1951 with Columbia Records, and I went to Epic, and I was living in Chicago then and formed my group in 1951, and as I said before, it goes on and on. The rest is history.
Well, I wanted to play a little bit for our listeners from one of those early recordings. This is a tune that you seem to return to with some regularity, as far as I can tell, Autumn Leaves, which, of course, is a great standard, and this one with off of the album simply called the Ahmad Jamal Trio.
Mm-hmm.
And before we play this, I'm curious to know, what is it about this tune that makes you come back to it?
Well, they're always to do reprise. They're always different settings, and you know, sometimes we do studio recordings, sometimes we do remote recordings, mistakenly referred to as live. They're all live, but some recordings are done in studio, some are done away from the studio. That's what we call a remote recording. And I've done Autumn Leaves, I think, because there have been different settings, some in the studio and some on location.
Well, let's give a listen. This is the trio that consists, of course, of pianist Ahmad Jamal, guitarist Ray Crawford, and bassist Israel Crosby from the early 1950s. Here on Live and Local. The tune is called Autumn Leaves, as I'm sure you could recognize. Pianist Ahmad Jamal, who's my guest here on Live and Local, guitarist Ray Crawford, and bassist Israel Crosby from the early 1950s disc called the Ahmad Jamal Trio. He's going to be with, of course, a different set of musicians at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts tomorrow night at 7:30 in Urbana, and we'll have a real privilege to have him in our midst, and, of course, playing his new record, which we'll talk about certainly in a little while. I gather these folks that were just playing remain among your favorite trio.
Ray Crawford used to be a tenor saxophonist. That recording is done with guitar, as opposed to Vernon Fournier, who later replaced Mr. Crawford on drums, as opposed to guitar. But that particular setting, it's a man from my home also, Ray Crawford, one of the great guitarists, he's gone too, and Israel Crosby, who was never very difficult to get because he was busy with Benny Goodman all the time. He was one of Benny Goodman's favorites. And I was his pianist at first in Chicago when I first went there, working at a place called Jack's Back Door. I was Israel Crosby's pianist, and I was fortunate to get him later on after a great deal of effort. But those records are that particular collection you're referring to, one of my favorites. That's the first recording in Poinciana was done with Ray Crawford, an exquisite recording, and Israel Crosby and myself. Then later on, as I said before, Ray stayed in New York. We came back to Chicago, and he was replaced by drums, and it was one Vernel Fournier, another master musician. But that's very interesting. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I remember that collection. It's one of my favorites with Ray Crawford and Israel.
I want to go to a different setting of Autumn Leaves, if you don't mind, with a different band, so to speak, a group that you've, I gather, played with some regularity over more recent years. And the approach here seems, well, it's first of all far more expansive. This is with Idris Muhammad and the drums, bass James Kamek, and tenor sax player George Coleman.
George Coleman, one of the great masters of that instrument.
And for our listeners, what has happened between laying down the main tune in the space of a couple of minutes or three, and now in year 2000, actually celebrating your 70th birthday at the time, and now we have a tune that expands to 12 minutes or so. What's happening?
Well, what happens is, as I said before, different settings. The first recording with Mr. Crawford and Mr. Crosby and myself was done in the studio. At that time, you had your limitations in the studio. They would narrow it down. You know, you could play extended messages, musical messages, but at that time, we were concentrating on a shorter presentation. Now, the one with Mr. Coleman was done at the Olympia on my 70th birthday, I believe, in Paris. So we had plenty of time to stretch out, and that's what happened. The result is that 12-minute recording that you have reference to.
And, of course, stretching out means not only doing the tune, but also lots of extended solos and,
correct.
The things, the basics of improvisation. Well, here it is. It's Autumn Leaves. Many years later, year 2000, with Ahmad Jamal, my guest on Live and Local. Another take on Autumn Leaves here on Live and Local with Ahmad Jamal. In this recording, drummer Idris Muhammad, bassist James Kamek, and tenor sax player George Coleman. He is coming to the Krannert Center in Urbana Saturday night with bassist Reginald Veal, drummer Herlin Riley, and percussionist Manolo Badrena. And they all recently released a CD called Blue Moon, and that is essentially what they'll be doing on Saturday's concert. And maybe you can address that a little bit, if you don't mind. When you, it appears from what I've read that you actually played the CD before you recorded the CD.
This is a very interesting project, Kevin. It began in my home, of course, and I was constructing a bass line. And, you know, my music dictates what it wants to do, and I like it that way. And it, you know, my repertoire is very vast, having been playing and working at it since I was 3 years old. I'm 82 now, so after 79 years, you know a few compositions, be it Debussy or Chopin or Art Tatum or whatever. So Blue Moon, I think, probably was written before I was born. Or shortly thereafter. And when I constructed this bass line, I said, "This is Blue Moon." And the rest is history. I don't mean to keep saying that, but it is. And it's been received spectacularly well. And in this day and age, with this assault on intellectual property, it's hard to sell records because the record business is almost destroyed, unfortunately, because of the Internet and the downloading, uploading, sideloading, blackberries, strawberries, and all this other stuff we have. But we've been fortunate to have a breakthrough with this record. Premiered at the Châtelet Theater in Paris, 1,800 people there, and that was February 9th of this year. And it's been going great guns ever since. This CD has been very, very well received.
So when you say the CD premiered, meaning you performed all the music from it and then you recorded it?
No, we released this in February 9th in conjunction with the concert.
Hmm.
No, the recording was done in New York, one of my few sessions in New York, because I've been recording for French companies for the past 15 years. So most of our recordings are done in Provence or in outside of Paris or in Paris or some other venue in France. But this, I chose to record the circumstances dictated. I used Avatar Studios in New York, and could to good result, because it was a very, very good package, and the result was good. Michael Franks came by and we met for the first time, and he stayed there, and I think while we were there, we did the track Invitation, which has been well received. So that's the story. But the recording was done in October of 2011 at Avatar Studios,
and
released after I edited and did the necessary things that I always do. Released on February 9th, as I said before, in February, in conjunction with the concert we did at the Châtelet Theater there.
And then, of course, you'll be recreating it tomorrow night. I wanted to play the title track, so to speak. This is Richard Rodgers' Lawrence Hart tune called Blue Moon, and it takes a while for the tune to really manifest itself, especially in totality. And also, am I imagining throughout this CD, am I hearing the opening theme from A Love Supreme with some regularity?
No.
Or is that coincidental?
No. I think perhaps it's been said that Mr. Coltrane borrowed some things from me, and he's institutional, of course, and I am as well, so we borrow things from each other, but I don't think there's anything I borrowed from Mr. Coltrane on that one, no. I think that's all me.
Here's Blue Moon with Ahmad Jamal, Reginald Veal on bass, Herlin Riley on drums, and Manolo Badrena on percussion on Live and Local. Blue Moon, Ahmad Jamal's take with his band on the new recording of the same name. They're going to be recreating that piece and the other tunes from the record Saturday night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. And I want to ask you a question about a reference that I've read a number of times that you consider your ensemble, whether it's this one or any other one, an orchestra, sort of in line with your terming what we most of us call jazz and you call American classical music. What does that mean when you refer to this as an orchestra?
Well, that's just what it is. You know, the term trio is very limiting. I don't allow people to bill me as trio or quartet or blah, blah, blah. It's just AHMADJAML, just Ahmad Jamal, or Ahmad Jamal, if you prefer, and that's because I think orchestrally. And you can have 10 pieces that may sound like two. You can have two pieces that can sound like 10, depending on what your recipe musically is and the ingredients you put in. So I like to think of my work as being with small ensembles or large ensembles. I work with every configuration known or unknown to man, everything from the Cleveland Pops Orchestra to 22 Voices in New York that I wrote 4 years ago. Two of my favorite works, releases, are on Chess Check and Argo. They're vocal things that I've arranged for the oldest instrument in the world, that's a human voice. So you have to respect that. So I've worked in every configuration known to man. So I don't like to refer to an unknown to man to refer to my groups as trio or quartet. I'm either working a small or large ensemble.
When you are making your arrangements, whether it's an arrangement of a standard by somebody else or a new composition by yourself, do you think orchestrally in deciding that this voice will do that, this voice will do that, and so on?
I think orchestrally every day, every minute. That's how I grew up. Pittsburgh fosters that kind of growth musically. And that's just the way I was raised. And fortunately so, because I was listening to Duke Ellington and Count Basie in various venues when they used to come to Pittsburgh. So I had an orchestra then in my mind, and they added to it. And then I listened to the great orchestrators. Ravel was one of the great orchestrators. The present-day orchestrators I like are Johnny Mandel, one of the great guys who knows what to do with everything from timpani to bassoon. And another man that I commissioned to do some work with me is Richard Evans, who's been doing professorial at Berkeley in Boston for years and years. He's retired now, but he's one of the great orchestrators too. So I've been introduced to some great people, past, present, and hopefully future.
When you are playing the piano, do you imagine the sounds of other instruments taking shape in your right hand or in your left hand?
I can hear just what I'm going to do. I know what the line I want to assign to my basses. I know what lines I want to assign to Manolo, who is a superb percussionist, and so forth and so on. And that's why my works can be adapted to big bands so easily. There's a guy named Gil Evans. The late Gil Evans, who worked with Miles Davis for years, and they were able to do my new rumba and other things because it's easily adapted to a big orchestra. So it was very easy, a piece of cake for Gil to do that. And Gil was one of the great orchestrators as well. I didn't mention him along with Ravel and Johnny Mandel and Evans, but Richard Evans. But Gil Evans is another one, a magnificent writer. He was writing for Claude Thornhill, which most people have forgotten about, years before he joined ranks with Miles. But Miles and him got together and made some wonderful, wonderful things.
I guess what I was wondering, too, is on the piano itself, do you imagine orchestral instruments in your right hand, in your left hand, or do you hear the piano as simply an orchestra in its own?
Well, the piano is an orchestra unto itself, Kevin, as you know. I mean, you can go and do a Horowitz and play solo, and you can incorporate it in an ensemble, or large or small. So the piano is the orchestra within itself, and that gives some substance and some credibility in as to why pianists think orchestrally. At least this pianist does.
Well, I want to go out with one of the tunes from the record Blue Moon, which is one of your compositions, and it is, of all of these on here, it's the one that features the piano most prominently, where it seems to me the other voices are more in the background. And it, to me anyway, you have the tune, which is a ballad-like tune, and I'm talking about I Remember Italy. And then you have these, what struck me as meditative moments in between the statements of the tune. And I wondered how you thought of it when writing it and imagining the title, and then when performing it.
Well, I was in Italy. Of course, I have been to Italy many, many times, one of my favorite places as well. And I was doing this, doing sound check, and the audience started singing it, the few people that were attending the sound check. We couldn't do it without somebody being there. It's hard to keep people when you're doing a sound check, especially when it's an outside event. And they were singing it while I was playing it. And I said, I got to get this copywritten right away. And I sent it right to my office. I had sent this to the Library of Congress, Toot Sweet. And when I wrote that, it's an extended composition, because that's the longest track on the CD. It's about 12 or 13 minutes, is it not?
Yeah.
I don't have the time in front of me, but I wrote it, so I think it's
13 minutes and 14 seconds.
Yeah. What's that?
13 minutes and 14
there
seconds.
There you go.
Yeah.
So it reminds me of my experiences in Italy. I've written other songs. I've written Perugia, which is one of my favorite cities in Italy, but I also wrote Flight to Russia. I write about cities as well. Toulouse, I wrote about Toulouse in France 5 minutes after I landed in Toulouse. So this is a result of my many, many excursions and concerts in Italy. I remember Italy.
And it's Ahmad Jamal on the piano, his composition with bassist Reginald Veal, drummer Herlin Riley, and percussionist Manolo Badrina. They will all be at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana tomorrow night at 7:30 playing the record called Blue Moon. It's been my pleasure to welcome Ahmad Jamal to Live and Local. Thank you very much, sir, for joining us on the show.
Kevin, thank you for letting me occupy your valuable space.